We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. Joining me, as always, yet still way over there in sunny Southern California, amid the June gloom, his name is Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
You know, Ty, it is sunny outside right now in California. Sunny as ever. But inside, in this literal closet that I am still, the clawfish is still where I'm recording, on the news feed in front of me, I'm seeing a lot of that June gloom, Ty. Can you give me, I forget who sings it, can you tell me something good? Because I'm needing it. Yeah.
Well, it wouldn't be about college football. Nor about a coronavirus,
right?
Nor about a lot of what's going on out there in the world. We do have some news tidbits that we're going to go through, as we've been doing at the top of each and every episode. And I guess the good thing that I would say is that we're going to assume, for the purposes of today's concept, that there is going to be a college football season, and we got a fun game that we're going to play. So I'm excited about that.
Ty, not only do we have a fun game that we're going to play, maybe this is just a tease, but I did something that I haven't done in literal days. I took a shower.
Whoa.
And I do some of my best thinking during those showers. And I think I came up with a really, for me, interesting way to frame how we evaluate what we're going to evaluate in this game. That's a tease. Let's do housekeeping and news first, but you're going to want to stick around.
You will want to stick around, and if you want to pay attention to everything that we are forcing out there through the airwaves and social media channels, check us out on Instagram, check us out on Twitter, on Facebook. There's also a subreddit at solidverbal.reddit.com, and if you missed anything along the way, go on out to our website at solidverbal.com, sign up for our newsletter. We're going to be sending that out more. Oh, and subscribe to the show if you haven't done that already. We don't know what form this is all going to take on, because there remains a pretty open question, which I'll get to momentarily. But please feel free to subscribe and tell your friends that they can find us on Spotify, on Apple, on Google, really anywhere you get a podcast, you can find us. We are going to be broadcasting all throughout the foreseeable future, Dan.
Yeah, that's the plan.
Boop, 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 boop. Okay, so this may not be a news bullet per se.
Okay.
But I would just add that the news over the last 7 to 10 days, at least as it relates to a college football season, has definitely taken on a different feel. We have been going for a while with this mindset that we're confident there's going to be a season. We're confident there's going to be something. I think to a large extent, we still are confident there will be something. But the mood, is it fair to say the mood has shifted from a more optimistic tone to what we've seen lately, which is certainly more pessimistic?
Yeah, I don't know. Pessimistic, I guess, is sort of in the eye of the beholder. You know, on 24/7 Sports, which I suppose is part of this show based on the rubric we're going to work off of for the main segment. But do you know, are you familiar with the crystal ball?
Of course.
They have the experts, you know, say, okay, I'm giving a crystal ball for this school. Sometimes there will be a prospect, as from my understanding, where they're not sure. They want to put something in and they're not sure. And it says cloudy. I wouldn't go as far as putting a crystal ball in for some sort of dramatic canceled situation, but I think it's squarely cloudy, Ty.
It is cloudy. You know, I was thinking about this in the buildup to the show as I was getting ready, but it's my favorite quote of all times from Mike Tyson, the one about everyone having a plan until they get punched in the mouth. Mm-hmm. And I think it applies here because, look, we all expected that players would be testing positive. And as an abstract concept, we discussed it, we accepted it to some extent. We were, I guess, okay with talking about it. But now that it's here,
mm-hmm.
that optimism about a season happening at all has really taken that turn over the last week to 10 days or so. It feels different now that it's here. And that's where we're going to start with this news cycle. 23 right. Clemson players testing positive. The mayor of Clemson is saying that there's an elevated amount of virus in the wastewater, which we've come to learn is one way they can predict where outbreaks and hotspots are going to occur next. They're trying to do more down there at Clemson to control the spread of the virus, but 23 student athletes testing positive. At LSU, we've got 30 players in quarantine. Mm-hmm. It says at least 30 of LSU's 115 players have been isolated because they tested positive for COVID-19 or were found to have had contact with those who tested positive. Thankfully, mm-hmm. no athlete or staff member has required hospitalization. Most right. of the symptoms are mild, but still, 30 is an awfully big number. Then at K-State, as of Friday, 14 student athletes tested positive for active COVID-19 following testing of more than 130 athletes. The school said that those who have tested positive are being medically managed according to current guidelines. So how do we digest, how do we react to that news, Dan? Does it change how you feel about the prospects for a season in 2020?
Not especially. I think all of these schools came into the scenario thinking we're going to have positive tests. We need to have rules in place. We need to have procedures in place to quarantine, to isolate, to trace, and to figure out how we're going to act swiftly and safely. So, you know, Ed Orgeron talked about this at LSU, that this was an expectation. Now, that those numbers are scary. I'm not going to tell you they're not scary just because it is an indicator of just how easily something like this can spread. I don't know if you saw what happened in Croatia with Novak Djokovic.
Oh my God.
And the tennis players there. To be fair, there was video of all of them dancing in a club together without taking any sort of precautions. So I know there have been some ties to a nightclub, I think, in Baton Rouge, but I really do think that this was an expectation. The thing that's scary is we don't know what the short, medium, and long-term effects are, even for players who are asymptomatic or minimally symptomatic, that, sure, you're not hospitalized, but if you have more and more trouble breathing, it's harder to become an elite athlete at LSU, Clemson, Kansas State, Texas, wherever. So that, to me, is the problem, where even if they're not in the ICU, if there are 37 players who are not feeling well enough to suit up, it's very difficult to play a major college football game.
Can you imagine midway through the season, something like this coming down? Let's say Alabama's in the middle of a title run, and suddenly 20 of their players need to be in quarantine for 2 weeks, maybe the last 2 weeks of the year when they've got some big action on the schedule.
I don't know that any school has offered a magic number.
No.
That's, to me, is the interesting thing. And I saw some people tweeting about, well, we're seeing all this attention being given to college football programs and what they're doing. What are schools themselves doing. I've seen some schools come, you know, out now. We've seen some scheduling changes at places like South Carolina. I know Notre Dame has been very clear about how they're going to organize things for students and campuses. But we're talking about, for the majority of the time on this show, we're talking about huge, huge universities with tons of people on quads and in lecture halls. Notre Dame's a small school. What's going to happen at Washington, at Michigan,
Penn State?
At Penn State? And I'm, you know, everybody knows about your time in college and just how many people you came across.
Sure.
And just the indelible mark you left on the student population.
Yep.
But these are huge, huge campuses. What is the plan at these places? It's still June, but I, you know, when you see some of the dominoes across different sports that aren't, that tennis players are not coming into contact with each other, golfers are not coming into contact with each other, basketball players are not coming into contact with each other because there's just so many more football players on a field at any given time, it's hard not to be worried.
Well, to that end, 30 UCLA players have demanded protections. I read to you from the LA Times. The document reviewed by the LA Times late Thursday asserts that players do not trust UCLA to act in their best interest, particularly in regard to their health, a realm where it says the school has, quote, perpetually failed us, citing neglected and mismanaged injury cases. The document does not provide examples. So this is 30 UCLA players getting behind a document. Some of their demands are a third-party health official being on hand for all football activities to see that protocols for virus prevention are being followed, that anonymous whistleblower protections are provided for athletes and staff to report violations, and that each player can make a decision about whether to come back to Westwood without fear of losing his scholarship or other retaliation, Dan.
Yeah, and there was a clarification that I thought was important because the way it was worded when it came out was they don't trust Chip Kelly's program. With it almost seemed like the words Chip and Kelly were in bold and underlined and italicized, when in fact it was just a way to define the program. And Dorian Thompson-Robinson, the UCLA starting quarterback, came out and said it's not about Chip specifically. It's about where the UCLA program is right now. And certainly Chip is the figurehead and he's the, you know, the buck stops with him. But they were very clear that it was just a general fear. And they issued that statement, it seems, maybe I got this wrong, I hope I don't have it wrong, it seems that UCLA, they hadn't really met with each other about the protocol and plans, and that they were planning on introducing a third-party non-UCLA medical professional at the scene of testing and care. So hopefully everything is on the same page at UCLA, because it's scary stuff. It's 100% scary stuff, and I don't blame the players at all for banding together and saying, this is what we want. If we're going to go out there and take risks more so than usual, because we're playing games for what seems to be the sole purpose of money and entertainment. Because if it weren't a money and entertainment thing, maybe this season would be postponed a little bit.
Final news tidbit here, much different note. This is breaking on Twitter per Anna Maria Tarullo. We just saw this before we hit record.
Right.
West Virginia football assistant, defensive coordinator Vic Koenig, placed on administrative leave following allegations of insensitive comments regarding race and religion. So certainly more to come on that one, but some late breaking news here right before we hit the record button, Dan.
Yeah, I have not read anything yet, but certainly West Virginia and Vic Koenig, a name that's been around a long, long time. So I guess read up if you're listening right now and hope. Because it's one of those things, it's not as bad. The truth is not as bad, because that's pretty ugly if true.
Where shall we go next? Do you want to get to our game?
I would love to get to our game, Ty.
Is that the People's Court music?
It is. We are the people. And this
Can
is our
court. Can you explain this to me? What is going on here?
So from 1981 to 1993, Ty, this was the theme song. So what we're doing is, a couple weeks ago, our pal Bud Elliott, now at 247, 247 Sports, came out with his 2020 blue chip ratio. And quite simply, the blue chip ratio is what percentage of your team is made up via scholarship offer, not transfer, not walk-ons, of 4- and 5-star players. Because, as he's found, national champions are exclusively made up of teams with a blue chip ratio of at least 50%. At least half of your team was a 4 or 5 star according to the 24/7 composite rating. And so there are 15 teams in 2020 whose rosters fall in line with at least 50% being a blue chip athlete coming out of high school. And what we are going to do is we are going to pair these teams, these 15 teams, in a sort of bracket style, like in the NCAA tournament, the 1 seed plays against the 16 seed, right?
Right.
So we are going to draft pairs. So the 15 seed in this case is Texas A&M. They are exactly at 50%, whereas Alabama is at 83%. So Alabama has the highest percentage of blue chip, Texas A&M at exactly 50, the lowest percentage of blue chips of these blue chip ratio teams. So we are going to go back and forth and draft pairings of these teams with a blue chip ratio of at least 50%. And we are going to hope for one of the teams in our pairings. We're going to hope that they win the national championship. So you have to be strategic, Ty, because it's not just about drafting Ohio State, because perhaps a pairing of Clemson and Michigan is a better combination odds-wise, or Ohio State and Washington is a better combination odds-wise than, say, Georgia-USC or Alabama-Texas A&M.
Now, what I don't like about this game... what I don't like about this game is... we've paired up 1 in 15, mm-hmm. and as we do the bracket thing the whole way through, we're left with Florida.
Yeah.
Without a dance partner.
Florida's the 8 seed. Now, typically I would give them the 9 seed, right?
Correct.
I'm giving them a wild card, and I'm giving them 2 teams. And that's you can ask your question now.
Yeah, I mean, typically Alabama would get that wild card, but
right.
we've chosen to run our own bracket pool a little bit differently here.
Correct.
And we've also named some of these pairings, and so it made more sense to stick Florida with both Florida State and Miami and refer to that trio as Florida Men.
Correct.
Florida Men. So here's what we got. Here's how our pairings are shaping up. We've got do you want it?
Yeah, of course I want it, the whole show. We're just looped.
Alabama and A&M. The so-called Francione Farm.
That's correct.
Georgia and USC, the Jarvis Jones Junction. Little alliteration there, Dan. I can't even say it.
I love alliteration. Yeah, yeah.
Ohio State and Washington, recent Rosie Ranch. More alliteration. Are you crazy?
Why not? Why not?
Texas and Notre Dame. You called it 18-wheel warehouse. I didn't like it when I heard it. I still don't, but I haven't thought of anything better. So that's what it
is.
Mm-hmm. LSU and Penn State, the Joe Brady Bunch. This is the best one.
Thank you.
Oklahoma and Auburn, the Sugary Sweethearts. That's cute.
2017 Sugar Bowl. You really like talking with this under you, don't you?
I do. Bed of People's Court Music. Clemson and Michigan, the Rashawn Gary Roundabout. And finally, as we said, Florida, Florida State, and Miami. That trio rounding out Florida Men, Dan.
Yeah. So what we're going to do is, if you, I mean, I'll give you the first pick. I don't really care. But if you select with the first pick, the 18-wheeler warehouse, Texas and Notre Dame, you feel like the national championship is going to come from that pair. You feel it so strongly that you're taking that pair. You have to make the case. And then I'm going to make the case against. And I want people to weigh in listening. Not that they agree that Texas or Notre Dame is going to make the championship game, or excuse me, win the national championship. But who did a better job arguing for or against?
Okay.
Like, if you really think, Ty, like, look, that's a tough ask to defend Texas and Notre Dame going to the national championship game, or winning the national championship, excuse me. That's a tough ask. But you know what? He really positioned it well. I'm giving him the nod there. So just
let
us know.
I'm not
going to
do well
job.
At this game, am I?
I think you're going to do great.
I'm not going to do well at this game.
Just, Ty, it's not... isn't it, what's it called, George Costanza,
yeah.
who said, it's not a lie if you believe.
True.
You need to get to that place mentally and emotionally, Ty.
Okay. A lot of BS going to be coming through this microphone. I hope you're ready
do,
for
do,
that.
Do. Okay. And the other thing is, we should mention, whichever team wins the national championship, say Ohio State wins a national championship, they are the 3 seed.
Yeah.
And if they're on your squad, I'll buy you three beers. I'll buy you three tacos. I'll buy you three of any reasonably priced social eating or drinking item.
Okay. Is that the bet?
Yeah. That's the bet.
As long as it's not a hair bet, I'm fine with that.
It's not a hair bet, but okay. If A&M or USC wins, it's pricey. Florida State wins a national championship. Yeah.
So you want me to go first?
Yeah, take the first pick.
What are we calling this? A national championship draft?
So I will come up with a more clever name later. I have the Blue Ship Fantasy Court, like Blue Chip, Blue Championship. But it's workshoppable.
We can workshop that, yeah.
Take that first pick.
All right. With my first overall pick. We get so much mileage out of that draft, Chime.
I love it so much. It makes me feel great.
You know, I'm not crazy about Michigan, but it's hard for me to bet against Clemson. So I am going to go with the Rashawn Gary roundabout pairing.
Oh, wow.
And I am going to take both Clemson and Michigan. Let me start with Michigan.
Yeah.
I hate this selection.
What, Ty? You got to sell it. Play.
I don't have to do anything. I don't want to.
Make a deposit at the Belief Bank, Ty.
What I will sell you on is why Michigan will not win the national championship this year, okay? They got questions at quarterback.
You're not supposed to do that if you're drafting
them. It's my show. I can do whatever I damn well please.
Ty. All right.
I'm taking the good with the bad here, sir. Sir? Michigan's got questions at quarterback, questions along the line, questions about their wide receiver depth. I'm very mixed on their defense. I have no idea which direction the program is headed. I really genuinely root for Michigan to be better than they've been and to truly make that push into the upper echelon of college football. They're not there yet. Don't know if they'll get there under Jim Harbaugh. They're my handcuff here because Clemson.
So does that mean now I have to make the case for Michigan in order to see who does better?
There's no logical case for Michigan.
Disagree. Continue.
Well, what's the case? Go ahead.
The case for Michigan is they've routinely had an excellent defense, certainly until the Ohio State game. But maybe it's one of those things like those dig headlines where it's like this one little wrinkle opened up everything. Perhaps this is the year because they're deep. I like them at all three levels. Michigan, they returned key players at all three levels on defense. And yes, quarterback is an issue, but they haven't had to rely on a transfer like they've had to do in multiple years with Jake Rudock and Shea Patterson more recently. So they have system guys in Joe Milton and Dylan McCaffrey. Are they killers?
No.
Probably not.
No.
But you don't necessarily need that if you have an excellent defense and you surround them with talented dudes. They're better at running back than where they were last year. They've gotten a lot better along the offensive line these past couple of years with the hiring of a new coach and Ed Warner. And while I definitely have questions about receiver, Josh Gattis in year two, maybe he's adjusting things. He's still pretty well regarded, maybe not among Michigan fans, but in the coaching community, people I think pretty highly of him. The schedule works out pretty well, Ty. The schedule's, I mean, I know they go to Columbus, but before that, you know, to get Washington as early as they do is a good thing as they break in a new offensive system with your guy, John Donovan. Wow. I think they
there are Michigan fans out there ripping off their face masks and just giving a good old primal scream right now. You've given Michigan fans more joy than they've experienced in the last several months.
I'm just saying there's a certain degree of continuity and you don't break through until you do, right? You don't break through. Clemson didn't beat Florida State until they did. Okay? So with Ohio State having to replace what they do on defense, and we'll get to Ohio State for and against, I'm not saying it's a great year to be going to Columbus. I certainly am not.
I might have to package up Michigan as part of a trade, like a 3-for-1 trade to see if I can pry a true contender away from you. But Michigan is mine. I've got Michigan.
Look, Wisconsin and Penn State are both at home this year. It's successive weeks in late September, early October. They travel to Minnesota without Kirk Shiraka, but with your boy Mike Sanford calling the offense. And the back half of their schedule, Purdue, by Maryland, Rutgers, Indiana, Ohio State. If they can win games that are close, they can win some toss-ups, and quarterback works out. My problem with Michigan, and even though I just made the case for them, my problem with them is what I discovered while taking a shower.
Oh.
And my problem is literally that word. I think Michigan has a problem on offense.
A problem.
And that is, I don't know of any player on their offense. When you look at teams that compete for national championships regularly, they all have players that can be described as problems. Najee Harris is a problem. Right. Justin Ross was, and unfortunately won't be this year, a problem. Justin Fields is a problem where you know what they're going
to
do.
How does this relate to what you found in the shower?
I was thinking about how I felt about Michigan in the shower, Ty.
Okay, so no anatomical references here.
No,
okay.
No. Everything is totally acceptable as per usual in the shower. But that's what I was thinking about. That I was thinking about, and that you look at the back half of this blue chip ratio list, is what does their roster of problems in a good way look like? And especially on the outside, like Hassan Haskins and Zach Charbonnet in the backfield, they're pretty good. I need problems if I'm holding up hardware. Travis Etienne, J.K. Dobbins, Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
When
problems.
You do a college football podcast, you think about this stuff in the shower. All right. We done with Michigan? Can we be done with Michigan, please?
All right. Make a Clemson case. Be positive now.
I'm very positive. I'm very bullish on Clemson. One to three favorites, I believe, tied with Ohio State atop the latest Vegas polls or Vegas odds. Mm-hmm. Trevor Lawrence is probably going to win the Heisman.
Maybe.
Him or Justin Fields. But he's certainly in the conversation. He's also going to have some competition from his own backfield with Travis Etienne, who I think furrowed some brows by saying he's coming back.
Whoa. Yeah.
Big deal. Amari Rodgers is going to have to pull a little bit more weight in that receiving core now that Justin Ross is going to be out with his own health issues. And of course, they had T. Higgins move on to the NFL. They've got a cavalcade of playmakers. It's been a thing at Clemson, in case you haven't noticed. They do have some questions along their offensive line, but they've recruited very well there. Their defense should be really good in the front four. And we've seen what Clemson can do when they've got a really good front four, haven't we?
We absolutely have.
The back seven, more questions about the back seven. Thankfully, though, Brent Venables is a guy who knows how to build up a defense.
Sure.
I'm looking at the schedule. I'm looking at this team. I'm looking at another run through the playoffs, another run into that national championship game. I feel very confident. I feel very confident, Dan, that this is one of the final two teams standing at the end of all of this, assuming they can get by the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, which we'll talk about a little bit later.
I mean, that's the huge hurdle because it's in South Bend, right?
It's in South Bend.
Huge. I think they have problems in a good way on both sides. I'm going to have to qualify that throughout the show.
Did you find these while in the shower?
The Clemson good problems?
Yeah.
I did not find that. This was all a Michigan shower.
Michigan shower, right. Okay.
There are pieces on all three levels of Clemson's defense that I like a lot, especially when you look at their incoming recruiting class. The Justin Ross loss is a huge hit, even though they've developed receivers perhaps better than any other school. You know, Dabo Sweeney's background makes it so. And Travis Etienne is, you know, you give him an inch, you're giving up a mile. So the case is really difficult against Clemson. But what we've seen from Clemson almost annually is that yearly lapse, that brain fart Saturday, whether it was North Carolina and allowing the Tar Heels to control the ball, whether it was NC State, whether it's Pitt, whoever, that it's tough sometimes when you are so far ahead of the pack, no pun intended, to keep your focus all year long, no matter the success you've had. And because of, and I still think the ACC is getting better, but not anywhere near as deep as it needs to be getting respect from me and probably you. If they have that slip up this year, even if it's against a good Notre Dame team, they're going to be dinged more so than other teams, thus making their path harder. And we've seen it in a lot of seasons that a clear playoff worthy team is left out just because of a week of lapsing. Yeah. So that to me is the case against Clemson, that because they're so thoroughly deep everywhere, you know, they lose a huge problem in Isaiah Simmons in a good way on defense, who is so do everything. But I'm not worried particularly about a Brent Venables defense right now that's going to be an actual issue. So I think your case is strong. That's the only way I see them being left out, that they are just an extraordinary 11-1, 12-1, but everything just broke unluckily for them.
Interesting game in week two against Louisville.
Yeah.
Mikhail Cunningham.
Mikhail.
Okay. It is your selection, Dan. I have selected Clemson and Michigan.
I'd really like to be fun, but my cases against so many players just are hanging on my head. I'm going to take Alabama and Texas A&M.
You almost have to, right?
I know that. I'm going to make the case for Texas A&M, which is difficult, Ty, but I play the game. I buy in.
Sure.
So the case for Alabama is pretty straightforward. They're the most talented team in the country. They are going to be a lot healthier up front on defense than they were last year. They should, I believe, get Dylan Moses back at a certain high rate of play. The schedule is, you know what? It is trickier than usual, but they've earned a benefit of the doubt that I don't think anybody has. They have USC on a neutral site, as at least by the time we're talking, they do. They have Georgia during the regular season, which is great, but it's in Tuscaloosa, so that's nice for them. They've got a bye between their two toughest road games in the conference, and that's at Tennessee, at LSU. And they finish against Texas A&M and Auburn. The case for is that they have one of the best five running backs in the country, maybe one of the best 10 players in the country, a Heisman candidate, Najee Harris. They still have Devontae Smith and Jaylen Waddle. And even though the secondary looks to be pretty new, they don't really have seasons that you can point to where you can say, man, you could just throw on Alabama. Nick Saban, this is what he does. He transforms and develops and identifies quality defensive backs. So I'm dancing around the quarterback thing because sometimes it just doesn't matter. They won a national championship with Jake Coker, who is fine. Mac Jones is at least fine. Bryce Young, while a true freshman, looks like he'll develop into something probably special. Now, will he be that guy in September if he wins the job? I don't know. That Georgia defense looks like it's really, really good. But just in terms of what we've seen in the last decade, Alabama and the odds feels pretty smart. Make your case against Alabama right now.
I don't have a good case against Alabama. I guess if you were
killing me here, you're killing me.
Well, if you were trying to establish one, I guess you could point to inexperience on the defense. Maybe
the quarterback situation. Let's list the quarterbacks who are picking them apart, though.
But you're splitting hairs here. They're just so good. They're so good across the board. The Mac Jones, Bryce Young thing, I think, will be a question, right? What's the offense going to look like? That's tough to say, but I think you hit it. In either case, we have seen Nick Saban thrive, both with and without a dynamic dual threat quarterback, especially when he's got a beast offensive line and a running back like Najee Harris.
Which they do. The line is great.
Which they do. And they've got receivers out wide. They will find ways to put up points. There's not a doubt in my mind. Defensively, I guess the only thing that there is some inexperience, but they're just so good. The level of talent there. Again, this is the top blue chip ratio team at 83%. So I think they're doing just fine. The schedule is interesting to me. It features USC, a team that we're going to discuss here.
I think that's the clear reason to pick against them.
Yeah, Georgia in week three, early on, against a really good defense, as you said. There are road spots at Tennessee, at LSU, and then later in the year, home against A&M, who we're going to talk about momentarily, and Auburn. It's an SEC West schedule. They do get Georgia. They add in USC. This is not a Clemson schedule, you know, and no disrespect to Clemson, but this is an SEC West schedule.
They're playing two of the three best teams in the East.
We got a tough draw with Georgia, and they tack on USC as well. So, I guess that would be the case that you could find a slip up there on the Alabama side of things.
You could find two slip ups. You could see Georgia and going to Baton Rouge. If LSU is still pretty good, which I think they will be on offense anyway, with Terrace Marshall and Jamar Chase, those are problems, Ty. Those are big time problems. So going to Baton Rouge, even after a bye, they both have that bye week. And having Georgia, they could have a very successful 10-2 season and not even end up in the playoff.
Can I ask you about your handcuff in this selection, A&M?
You want the case?
If I swapped out TCU for A&M this year, would you think less of me?
Oh, I'd much rather have A&M than TCU. God. What is with you and TCU?
I've had a hard time quitting TCU. You know how it is.
Should we like have our pal Marshall, who played at TCU, Marshall Newhouse, so you can just say, tell me frog stories.
Yeah.
That's right.
I have a hard time quitting TCU, but I feel like it's easier if I stay in the great state of Texas. Give me the case for and against A&M.
Okay, Mike Elko is one of the absolute best defensive coordinators in the country. You saw the step they took forward on defense last year, the Aggies. You look at their schedule. It was a murderer's row last year. You look at their schedule this year. I am not going as bullish as you went with Nebraska and their ability to potentially start 7-0.
7-0, baby!
I'm saying non-zero 9-1 or 10-0 start for Texas A&M. They have four straight first-year coaches in, I don't remember the exact order, but in Colorado, Arkansas, Fresno State, and Mississippi State early on, five overall, because they also have Lane Kiffin on their schedule. And that includes trips to Auburn and to South Carolina, I believe, in successive weeks. But this was a team that got, that just sort of out-uglied Auburn in a losing effort last year. South Carolina is doable. I think they'll have a better offense with Mike Bobo, but even traveling to Columbia, I think it's a winnable game. And they've recruited well enough that some gaps can be filled by 4- and 5-star guys, especially on defense. Now, they're going to need to rush the passer better. The offensive line needs to be a lot more consistent. And obviously, biggest of all, Kellen Mond, who does play up to big games sometimes, you know, especially with his legs. We saw the near win against Clemson a couple of years ago. He's played well against Alabama. If Kellen Mond can string together in year 13 of his time at Texas A&M, a top four season in the SEC quarterback-wise. He's efficient. He doesn't give the ball back. He, you know, guts out 3rd and 7s with his legs to keep drives going. I understand the case. It's a good year to get LSU because we don't know anything about what they're going to be Miles Brennan-wise. And, you know, I think they're going to be excellent on defense with Bo Pelini. But it's a good year. If any year is to come, it's a good year to get them. So I'm going to ride the recruiting and Mike Elko to say, we're going to fill in some gaps. We're going to take advantage of inexperienced sidelines early on, and we're just going to pile up small victories. And then suddenly we're sitting at 9-1 or 10-0. That's the case for.
All right.
Do you have a case against?
The case against them is that they're in the SEC West. And
sure.
While I think they've got a decent enough quarterback in Kellen Mond, talked a lot about Kellen Mond last year and how it was really all on his shoulders. He didn't get much help. I think he's decent enough. The argument against A&M is that he's not nearly decent enough to beat someone like Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields in a national championship. I could make the case that A&M could start 10-0. I don't know if I truly believe it like I believe Nebraska 7-0, but I could make that case.
I'll make the case against Nebraska. Watch a Nebraska game. Abilene Christian, North Texas, Colorado, Arkansas neutral site, Mississippi State and Starkville, going to be difficult. Fresno, at Auburn, at South Carolina, by Ole Miss, Vandy, at Bama, and LSU at home at Kyle Field to end the season.
I mean, I could make that case for 10-0. The schedule's nice. They've got the veteran QB in Mond. The issue I see is that he needs help around him. You know, like, who are the vertical threats? Can they block up front? Can they rush the
passer?
Do
they have a problem? Is that what you're saying?
I think that's what I'm saying. I think that's what I'm saying. The problem could be Jimbo Fisher. The problem could be the recruiting class that he has turned in the last couple of years. He's done a really good job there. But as for that one playmaker, one or two playmakers, I don't know who that is.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Kellen Mond, I don't think Kellen Mond can turn into that guy. We know a lot about what he is already. And I think it's asking an awful lot to expect that he is suddenly going to turn into this ultra efficient passer who is very responsible with the football. Just doesn't seem like that's the direction this is going to go. I would love to be pleasantly surprised, but it would definitely be a surprise.
I worked you through an exercise. It's a weird way of phrasing what I'm about to say. I worked you through an exercise saying if the Aggies had the best, fourth best SEC quarterback of the past decade or so, if it's, you know, so like who is the best, fourth best during a specific season quarterback, you know, Tyler Wilson, Nick Marshall, Brandon Allen, Connor Shaw, guys like that who are definitely pretty good, dependable, just not killers. Does that vault Texas A&M to a different strata? And so, you know, Kyle Shurmur, do those names move the needle for you enough to say, now I think differently about Texas A&M?
If Kyle Shurmur were the quarterback at A&M and not Kellen Mond, is that what you're asking?
Right. who has Kyle Schirmer, did not win or perform admirably in huge Vanderbilt games, but he put up nice numbers.
I think, oh man, that's impossible. I don't know. I still think the question remains.
You like Elko though, right?
I do like
your
Elko.
Irish heart.
I do.
Okay.
The question remains about the help though. It doesn't matter what quarterback you put in there. Tell me about the help. Tell me who's running the rock. Tell me who the vertical threats are. None of those guys.
Watch for the helpers.
Yeah, who are the helpers? None of those guys. Who's rushing the passer, right? These are questions that I have regardless of who the quarterback is.
Do you want to make a selection, a new pairing?
I think, now, do you get two in a row? Are we doing this fantasy draft
style? Are we snaking it?
It's up to you.
Yeah,
you made the game.
No, you know what? No, I didn't say that as we started, so the pick goes to you.
It says right here. Fantasy
draft. Does it say snake?
Yeah, in the rules that you wrote up, Ty and Dan will conduct a snake style fantasy draft of teams in the pool of teams.
Can I make a selection?
Who do you got?
I'm going to take the Jarvis Jones Junction, Ty.
Whoa, Georgia.
Georgia, USC. Jarvis Jones transferring to the Dogs from the Trojans. The case for Georgia is somewhat straightforward, though it does have its limitations. The case for Georgia is Kirby Smart and his staff and that program. They've amassed an absurd amount of talent, especially on defense. Dan Lanning, I thought, did a great job last year as he stepped into the role coordinating the defense, especially up front, especially in the meat of that defense. They're going to get after the quarterback. They're going to collapse pockets. There are no shortage of problems, good problems, on that Georgia defense. Offensively is actually where my question is, even though people seem to be pretty bullish because of the combination of Jamie Newman and new offensive coordinator Todd Monken. They don't have any time together, Ty.
No.
They didn't practice over the spring. And it's something I talked about with Joe Moorhead, which is what our offense is going to look like with new coordinators when they don't have time to sort of see what they have both in their returning players and in the case of Georgia, what do they have in this transfer in Jamie Newman? He's a very different kind of quarterback than what they've done recently. A lot of RPO stuff. He runs a lot. He's extremely talented. But they don't have time. They don't have time with him. The good news is they're surrounding him with good problems, Ty. George Pickens, Demetrius Robertson, good, but it'll be a new offensive line, but they've recruited there really well. It should be Zamir White in the backfield, former number one running back who's had injury issues. But there's enough there, even without their killers in the backfield recently, with Nick Chubb and Sony Michel and DeAndre Swift, that all of their offensive issues probably won't be solved because of the, introducing Jamie Newman and Todd Monken really quickly. But you look at what they look like after, or actually during and after the South Carolina game last year, they weren't scoring 30 points. I don't think they did until Georgia Tech with that much talent. So that's the case against. And also they traveled to Alabama, and you can hop on this a little bit more. I'm doing your work for you. The middle of their schedule is trappy. I don't know if you have it in front of you.
I do.
But it's Georgia has been a troubling October team these past couple years. So that to me would be my concern. But I think the case is strong that there's just so much in so many places on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard to split hairs with Georgia. You love the talent level. I absolutely am with you. I love the defense. They're completely loaded back there. Offensively, I've been reading the same optimism. I want to feel optimistic. I want to feel more confident. But to your point, Jamie Newman, Todd Monken, there's a lot there that remains to be seen. What will this offense look like? There's also a lot of turnover along the offensive line.
Sure.
Which is troubling in the SEC. I'm looking at the schedule now. There are four true road games. That's it. There are a couple neutral siders, but four true road games. And you mentioned that stretch in October. Start off the month with Vandy at home. Then they get Auburn at home. Then they go to Missouri, which is a weird place to play, let's be honest.
Look ahead week before the bye, yeah.
Bye week before the Florida game in Jacksonville. And then there is what I think could be a weird letdown look ahead spot. On the road in Columbia, South Carolina, against the South Carolina Gamecocks before coming back home to square off against Tennessee.
Yeah. I don't think they'll look past it after losing last year. It's certainly a revenge spot, but that is a hell of a sandwich.
Definitely some letdown potential there, depending on the way the Florida game goes, because Florida is another team on our list, and they should be pretty solid as well. It's an interesting schedule. I think it's well-balanced all throughout. They do need to get through that middle portion. I like the fact that they get Alabama early. Alabama's got some questions. We talked about Alabama. Not that many. But what's the offense look like? Some questions elsewhere that they need to answer. I like the fact that Georgia's got a rock solid defense and they've got the Crimson Tide early. I think that works to their advantage. I like this pick a lot. I really do. I thought about going with this if I had the opportunity to steal them off the back of a truck, if you didn't. But the one that I'm most interested in, actually, of this pairing is not Georgia, but USC.
This is, listen, I'm putting myself out there because we've enjoyed making fun of USC and hype for USC and expectations for USC each and every year. And next year is the year. Next year is the year.
Right.
The case is pretty straightforward for USC. They returned the best quarterback in the conference. It's a good place to start, Ty. Keaton Slovis is the best returning quarterback in the Pac-12. And there are other guys who are talented. Nobody accomplished what he accomplished. Nobody, I don't think, has the ceiling that he does. The best of Keaton Slovis is the clear highest in the conference right now. The talent up front on defense, I like Jay Tufeli. I like Drake. I always forget Drake Jackson. I think Drake Jackson is the defensive lineman. Drake London is the pass catcher. I like Drake Jackson. I like Palier. I'll get it right by the season. Not Teote. I like him at linebacker. The secondary is experienced. Todd Orlando, I still think is a good defensive coordinator, but I don't think he was right for what ailed Texas last season. I like Graham Harrell a lot. Their schedule sucks. Yeah. Schedule kind of sucks. That's the case against, but even still, it's a Utah team that's always pretty good, and it's on the road in Salt Lake. I always like picking against pretty decent teams with some hype going to Salt Lake City because that's just, it's where pretty good teams go to die and get exposed. They're traveling to Eugene early on in November. Washington is back at home. They're on the road against UCLA, but not really because it's within LA. And then they finish with Notre Dame at home. It's a tough schedule.
Yeah.
But the receivers, the front on defense, the coaching upgrade, I still think Todd Orlando is an upgrade to Clancy Pendergast in 2020. So that's the case right now is for a somewhat open Pac-12 South. Their road to the Pac-12 championship game, if there is one, is not terribly bumpy. I hate going to Utah, but other than that,
yeah, you can make a go.
The Keaton Slovis factor is you get to early December, anything can happen perhaps. That's the case to me.
See, I mean, the move last year to the air raid was something that I know we spent a lot of time on. And I think looking back now, you have to look back at it, and the injury to JT Daniels was unfortunate, but finding Keaton Slovis, a true freshman, was a huge win for Clay Helton. Installing that air raid and getting as much out of it as they did, a huge win. That offense should be dynamic again this year. It's not just
cleared
Keaton
out that
Slovis.
Quarterback room, by the way. Did you see that?
I see they cleared it out, but Matt Fink is still there. Matt Fink might be a professor at this point. He's in like his ninth year of eligibility.
He never left?
No, he's
he
the
didn't
backup.
Get the memo? Okay.
He's the backup. But my point here on the offense is just that it's not Slovis. It's not just Slovis. They've got a good line in front of him. They've got good receivers out wide. I think they'll be dynamic. Defensively, it's a mixed bag. It's a mixed bag. I don't know if we know what to expect. I do agree that Todd Orlando is an upgrade, but trying to come in and fix things, especially in this day and age with the coronavirus and practices being canceled and maybe not being able to work as much with the team as he would like, it's tough to say. It's tough to say,
okay.
But I'm really intrigued by USC, and I was pleasantly surprised when I went in and did some quick research on them going into 2020. I honestly found myself excited to see what this team turns into.
If we had said 3 years ago that USC got Todd Orlando to run their defense, everybody's super pumped, right?
I would think so, yeah.
Okay.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move.
your words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Because you have both Alabama and Georgia.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm in a bit of a defensive spot here, and I need to go Ohio State and Washington, the so-called recent Rosie Ranch, Dan.
Yeah, yeah. Playing the Rose Bowl a couple years ago.
It is hard to bet against a team with Justin Fields. I really like Ohio State. I like what Ryan Day did a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Let me start by making the case against Ohio State.
Wait, hold. This is very confusing for me. So this now I have to make the case for?
No, no. I'm going to make both cases. I'm going to play both sides of this coin.
I gave you the rules up front.
I am making my own rules. This is my show.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
There's an awful lot of turnover here.
There is.
I cannot make the case for without first acknowledging that there's somewhat of a case against, because the secondary got crushed. They got turnover along the defensive line at wide receiver and at running back.
Mm-hmm.
You look at this team, there's a lot there that remains to be answered. But you start with Justin Fields. I think that's a pretty damn good starting point. You look around the roster, up and down that roster. Yes, there are guys leaving, but God, are there guys coming in. This is a really, really good Ohio State team. As I look at this schedule, Dan, of course, they've got some games on there that I think are notable, particularly in mid to late October. They got a Michigan State game that I think in recent years might look a little bit more formidable, but they've got a new coach.
What a sandwich there, huh?
Yeah, who knows what direction that game's going to head. They do go to Beaver Stadium October 24th. That's been a tough place for them to play. But outside of that, Dan, and maybe that Oregon game.
What do you mean, maybe that Oregon
maybe
game?
Maybe that Oregon game.
Oregon's like the number five team in the country.
New quarterback. Don't know what's going on
there.
At Autzen.
In front of a probable empty stadium.
Probable empty stadium.
Yeah.
I think the schedule works out okay otherwise. Bowling Green, Buffalo, Rutgers, Iowa, Nebraska, Indiana, at Maryland, at Illinois, and then a home game against Michigan. There are landmines there. It's the easiest schedule.
I was going to say, you just said the word Iowa like you didn't watch the game from 2 years ago.
I feel like it's well-balanced. I feel like it sets up okay for them. It's just so hard to go against Justin Fields.
Right now, Ohio State is
a 1-3 co-favorite to win the national championship. And despite all that turnover, you still have to feel really good about their chances to go and certainly make it through the Big Ten, but also make it back into that playoff.
All right. I'm going to light a candle right now because I'm going to set the mood, because I want you to make that sweet, sweet case for national championship Washington Husky football. All right. Hold on. It's getting sensual in here. I don't know if you have Lex Steel drop or anything like that.
Do I have Lex? Of course I have Lex. You know that. I always have Lex.
All right, Ty. I'm getting a little steamy in this clofus. Make the case for national champion Washington.
New offensive coordinator John Donovan. Very dynamic. Was in the NFL with
you
the
can't
Jacksonville,
just say words.
With the Jacksonville Jaguars, Dan.
Yeah?
If you're not familiar with his work, prepare to be dazzled.
I'm ready.
I'm available for counsel, Huskers. Oh God, I can't even talk. I am available for counsel, Husky fans, FYI. Starting another Jake in 2020, this time.
Maybe.
Jacob Sermon.
Yeah, could be him.
Coming in for Jacob Eason. What else do we got here? Yeah, I don't have much for Washington, Dan. I just wanted to grab Ohio State.
Would you like me to make the case, and you want to make the case against them? Is that something you want to do?
I don't think there's a case for, which is part of my issue. I just wanted to have Clemson and Ohio State on my roster.
Listen, there is no real case for Washington as a national champion. The best I can do, and I try to approach all of these in earnest, they've recruited really well. They're a blue chip ratio team, Ty. There's a good amount of talent, especially on defense, really on all three levels, but especially along the line and in the secondary. I really, really like their secondary. Trent McDuffie and Elijah Molden, both very, very talented corners. Jimmy Lake has built a really good defensive program at Washington. I imagine, like most defensive head coaches, they're going to try to go ball control on offense. And John Donovan and ball control, hand in hand. I think they have a problem outside of Puka Nacua. I think is a good, really good wide receiver for UW. Their schedule is not great, Ty. They open with Michigan. They're on the road against Oregon, Utah, Cal, USC, and Wazoo. Has Jimmy Lake fielded a defense that has lost to Wazoo? He has not. Has he fielded a defense that has lost to Oregon, Utah, Cal? Yeah, he has. He definitely has. So the case is, if they ride ball control and a defense and it's a weird season because of no crowds, so it's a good year to have no crowd at Oregon if you're on the road in Eugene. That's something. It's a good year to have no crowd in Salt Lake City. That's a very tough place to play. I think that's the case, that they play smart, they ride their defense, and they pile up W's. But that's a lot of ats, Ty. It's a lot of ats.
All right. I want to go to my next pick, if that's okay with you.
Okay. Okay. Please do.
Give me that Joe Brady bunch. Give me that Joe Brady bunch.
Take them.
Let me start with Penn State. Penn State's the reason I'm taking this LSU and Penn State pairing. And I like LSU. But Penn State might be the sleeper. They're at 7-1. Right now, according to...
Yeah, to get to the playoff. Not to win it all, but to get to the playoffs.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Kirk Ciarrocca coming over from Minnesota, new offensive coordinator. I love that hire. I think it's an outstanding hire.
Mm-hmm.
I like the line. I think the running backs are very capable. They're deep at running back. I don't know if Jahan Dotson can step up and step in for KJ Hamler.
Yeah, it's tough.
That's sort of the main question offensively, but the bones are there. The bones are there. Sean Clifford, I think Ciarrocca is going to get more out of him. He's a legit dual threat quarterback. He can do a lot. I think Ciarrocca can make the most of that situation. Defensively, they got some losses, but they got some big names coming back. They got Shaka Tony and Jason Owe and Micah Parsons at linebacker, Tariq Castro Fields, Lamont Wade, all in the back. I said it before, I'll say it again. They got to give up fewer backbreaking pass plays. They got to get more out of their own passing game. Mm-hmm. But this is a team that I think is in a really, really good spot to maybe be a surprise. I now have Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State out of the Big Ten East. So I'm going to get somebody with the chance, somebody who's in the conversation come the latter half of the season. Penn State's schedule this year it's a good mix. I feel like it's the kind of schedule that you'd put together in the old NCAA 14 video game series. You're trying to get that A+ in the schedule department while not totally maiming yourself.
Right.
And so it's well balanced. On the road at Virginia Tech week 2 will be a challenge. Again, Lane Stadium, maybe without people, different.
What's going to be the most haunting empty stadium? Where it's like, ooh, that's so weird to look at fully empty, fully devoid of fans.
Wow, that's a good
question. To me, it might be Kyle Field.
I was going to say
it's
Michigan.
Now so big. Yeah, Michigan is a good answer. Michigan actually looks really cool, the way that they've built the M, in the square M into the seats. Yeah. That'll look, at least look cool. Kyle Field without, I know people like to make fun of the sort of faux militariness of Texas A&M, but there's an energy about Texas A&M games that it's going to feel very weird to see fully, you know, vacuumed.
On the road, Lane Stadium week two, they got mm-hmm. San Jose State and Northwestern before going on the road to Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Then they've got a bye. Then they have Iowa at home, which will totally be a trap game before Ohio State at home.
Correct.
At Indiana, at Nebraska, Michigan State, Maryland, at Rutgers to close out the year. That's a workable schedule.
That's an awesome back half, which is also what people say about me in the shower tie, but that's an awesome back half.
That's a workable schedule. So yeah. If Penn State can assemble the pieces, I think primarily on offense and just make a few tweaks on defense, they're in a really, really good spot here. On to LSU.
Hold on. Can I say something about Penn State real quick?
Sure.
You can't get picked apart by Kirk Shiraka if you hire Kirk
That's
Shiraka.
Right. That's right. You can't
as,
beat him.
As Dan taps his forehead.
Hire him.
If you can't beat him, hire him. I don't think they have any winter wonders on offense. That's the clear case. I should take that back. There's a lot of Journey Brown I like. There's a lot about that dude I like a lot. But your Jahan Dotson question, I like Baby Gronk, Pat Freiermuth. But I worry about who's stretching the field against Michigan, Ohio State, Iowa. That, to me, is a huge question about Penn State. Because Micah Parsons, on defense, is he the best linebacker in the country?
He's a top five draft pick. Yeah, easily.
I think they're able to, with an offensive step forward, I don't think they're getting to the playoff, but I think they become even more dangerous.
You may ask about LSU. What does this team look like without mm-hmm. Joe Burrow, without Joe Brady? What's it look like without Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Justin Jefferson and four guys that need to be replaced along that offensive line?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have an answer for you. This is a team that went through a bit of a revolution last year. They caught lightning right. in a bottle with Joe Burrow. I don't think it was a fluke. I'm not implying that. But that combination of Brady and Burrow was one of the all-time greatest offensive seasons we've ever seen. They outscored everybody. Joe Burrow had ridiculous numbers. They blew out their opponent in the national championship game. This was clearly a once-in-a-generation offense, once-in-a-generation team. They deserved it. Moving on beyond that, it strikes me that there's still a lot of talent on this team, an awful lot of talent on this team. Even mm-hmm. if, as you said, Miles Brennan is two-thirds as good as what we saw Joe Burrow do last season, that's still pretty damn good. That still gives you a chance in most of these games in the SEC. What I like about them is that they can rely on that defense.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Scott Linehan. Sorry, continue.
I like that Bo Pelini is back, baby.
Oh, love that.
I like that he's back. I like that they're good up front. I love Derek Stingley in the back. There are questions at linebacker. There are questions at linebacker. And I got real questions about what happens when Texas comes to town in week two. But I still think this team is really well positioned. They've recruited so well. They're riding a high here after winning that national championship. It does feel like they've got some momentum now. Ed Orgeron realized the error of his ways and needed to make some changes on offense. We'll see if they carry over now post Joe Brady. But you have to feel awfully good about where this team is at, even despite all the losses, Dan.
Yeah, I think they'll be good rushing the quarterback, even though that's a question. They're going to be too talented on every level, especially on the inside of their defense. They've got a lot of beef in the middle of that defense, so it's going to open things up everywhere else. I think you hit everything. They should be in a good place, and I actually want to change my answer. I think Death Valley is going to be the most haunting place empty.
You got two back-to-back picks here, Dan.
Okay. I guess I'll take Sugary Sweethearts. So that's Oklahoma and Auburn.
Oklahoma and Auburn, Dan.
Yeah.
Why don't you start with Oklahoma here? Because they've got a new quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I think we feel pretty okay about what Lincoln Riley can do with a new quarterback. He's sort of got a track record at this point. But the CeeDee Lamb loss to the NFL hurts.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of production do we get from guys out wide?
Yeah.
What does it mean to lose Kenneth Murray in the heart of that defense? Like there are some real questions at all three levels of this defense. So I was shying away from this pick because of questions not only about Oklahoma, but also Auburn, which we'll get to momentarily. But start with the Sooners here. How do you feel?
Well, I mean, you loved Penn State, so we can go through all the Penn State college football playoff memories you have. because Oklahoma gets there. Say what you will about what they do once there. They get there. Easier road, for sure. But they get there. The case for Oklahoma is, I think, pretty straightforward. They actually improved on defense. The last we saw of them, that statement doesn't make sense. But during the Big 12 season, they did enough confusing teams, creating havoc, attacking quarterbacks, that it's clear that Alex Grinch, I don't know what his ceiling is in Norman, but it's clear that he is improving things. He is getting them to an interesting place. Spencer Rattler was incredibly well thought of coming out of high school. I think he was the number one quarterback in the class a couple years ago. He steps in with experience in the program, and for the first time, he's not transferring in like the last couple quarterbacks, granted, or last three quarterbacks, two of them won Heismans. Pretty good track record. So Spencer Rattler should be in a good position, even though they lose CeeDee Lamb. All they do is keep replacing really great receivers with really great receivers. Maybe that's Charleston Rambo. I know they're dealing with injuries there with Jadon Hazelwood and Theo Howard, but I'm still not worried. They lose Trey Sermon. They still have Kennedy Brooks. They return a ton along the offensive line. And even though, you know, you mentioned Kenneth Murray and you mentioned questions on all three levels, I don't know if there's a long list right now of Big 12 quarterbacks that just out and out scare me. You take the good, you take the bad, there's Brock Purdy, right? You take the good, you take the bad, there's Sam Ellinger. There's nobody that is just like, man, I don't know. I don't know what this defense is going to do against that guy. Joe Burrow? Yeah, that's a question. They get Caleb Kelly back, hopefully for a full season. I like this Oklahoma team. It's not an amazing schedule, but it's fine. They get Baylor at home. They get Texas, you know, on the neutral site like they do every year. They're on the road against a TCU team I have a lot of questions about. It's a pretty smooth November. I'm not going to take Army lightly because we all watched that game a little while ago. And they have Tennessee early on. But it's Oklahoma. They just keep winning the conference. And I think Spencer Rattler, with time to develop now, I think he is going to have probably more upside than at least they had last year in the long term. So I like Oklahoma a good amount.
Is that candle still burning that you lit for Washington? Just
you're going to make me talk about Bo Nix?
Talk to me about your love for sweet, sweet, true sophomore Bo Nix, Dan. Make that case for Bo Nix, Heisman contender and national championship contender.
Walk me through every single game that Bo Nix has lost to Alabama. Walk me through every single one of them. He beat Oregon, even though he tried not to. He beat him with that last throw and led an offense in a win against Alabama without Tua, but nonetheless, beat Alabama. So he has played up in big moments. Chad Morris takes over at offensive coordinator. I think that's an upgrade. Kevin Steele is one of the best three defensive coordinators in the country. They lose a lot up front, and I'm not terribly concerned. Maybe I should be, but they've recruited well enough, and Kevin Steele, year over year over year, just keeps not allowing anything of offenses. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. Linebacker looks really, really good. The secondary should be fine. They lose, you know, key pieces, but they should be fine. And I think we assume, even with a new line in front of him and, you know, a sort of up-in-the-air situation, with a couple good returning receivers, Bo Nix can get too efficient. Because I don't think he was last year. I think he can become a lot more consistent this year. Chad Morris has a good reputation, at least had a good reputation with what he did at Clemson as a coordinator. So with this schedule, North Carolina at a neutral site, on the road against Georgia, I think they have a bye before Mississippi State, and then they finish with LSU and on the road in the Iron Bowl. It's a tough schedule for sure, but they're, you know, they're chaotic Auburn, and why count them out? So I'm rolling with them.
If we could just add a little bit more texture here.
Give me the case against. Do it.
You against Auburn?
Yeah, that's your job now. I made the case for both of these teams.
Entirely new offensive line. You said you kind of panned the fact that it's a new offensive line. They lose five starters up front in front of a quarterback who, let's be honest, had some shaky moments. I liked Bo Nix decidedly more than you all last year. That much is clear. Go back and listen.
Yeah.
But losing five starters up front, it's going to take a while, especially in this day and age with the Rona running wild. to get that kind of cohesion that you need to keep him protected. I worry about that. And again, I agree that Kevin Steele, one of the best defensive coordinators in the country, for sure. But losing Derrick Brown, losing Marlon Davidson, I think you give the secondary a little too much credit. I think it's questionable. I'm not as bullish on the defense as I think you are.
The one defense to really accomplish something against LSU last year. Now, Derrick Brown's gone. There's a lot different about this defense, but man, just every year you turn around and they're like the best defense in the red zone in the country.
All right. You get one other pick. Your last pick. Make it worthwhile.
I guess I have to take. Wait, I guess I could take either the 18 wheel warehouse or Florida Man, right?
You get one of the other. One of the other.
You know what? I'm going to take the 18 wheel warehouse.
Do it. Do it. Keep that candle burning, baby.
Let's start with Notre Dame. Let's get real with it, Ty.
Let's get real. Does this mean I get to make the case against Notre Dame?
That's correct. Oh, that is correct.
Baby. Go ahead.
Oh, baby. Are you like an and one sideline announcer? Oh, baby. So I've long now said quarterback and defense. That's my combination for playoff caliber. Ian Book is a playoff quarterback, correct?
He is a playoff participating quarterback, yes.
He has led a team to the college football playoff.
Correct.
Sir, you're on the stand. You're under oath. Okay. So that is fact. That is fact only. Their defense, they have probably one of the best seven defensive coordinators in the country in Clark Lea, right? I think he's a total stud.
You have a little bit of a Clark Lea boner. You love Clark Lea.
Okay, Ty. Easy. I know the candle's burning hot.
Yeah.
They don't have any obvious killers to me at offensive skill position. And, you know, Chase Claypool had to do a lot himself. They tried to build the whole plane out of Chase Claypool last season, and it worked to a decent extent. But I don't see an obvious replacement for him. Cole Kmet in the backfield it just seems like there's just guys. The offensive line should be really good in front of Ian Book. They're in decent shape at linebacker. I don't think they're going to get after the quarterback in the way that they have in previous years, but I still think they have guys. Dalen Hayes is still, I think, yet to reach his potential. We'll see. But I think Clark Lea will put him in a decent enough position with a schedule that, man, they've got the body blow back-to-back with Wisconsin and Stanford. But even that, like, it's Davis Mills, Jack Cohn. I'm not terribly sweating everything. They have McHale and Keaton Slovis back-to-back to finish the season. McHale, I believe, is in South Bend, and USC is in L.A. But I think they always seem to be good enough. They got blown out of the water by, Michigan last year? They ran all over them.
Yep.
And they might have one of those weeks, and maybe it'll be against Clemson. But I don't know. Combination defense secondary should be pretty good. Kyle Hamilton steps in. Aloy Gilman gone. I think they're going to be solid enough where they'll squeak out some 27-23s more often than not.
I was going to discredit your whole case.
Yeah.
Before you mentioned.
Then I said Kyle Hamilton.
Kyle Hamilton. Come on.
Your guy. Oh.
I would be content letting Clark Lea play Kyle Hamilton at all 11 defensive positions.
Sure.
Move him around like he's Isaiah Simmons. See what he can do, because he's really good. He's big. He's really good. He's going to play safety. He's going to get more minutes as a safety this year. And I think they should be really good on defense. The schedule's not bad. They got four games that basically determine everything. You mentioned Louisville and USC, and there's that Wisconsin game earlier on in the year. And then as we get to November, the home game against Clemson. And it's really those four games that I think will decide a lot. And what will decide it all truly won't be the defense. It's going to be Ian Book and what Tommy Rees can squeeze out of Ian Book. What can he get out of him this year?
Right.
Who's catching the passes? Don't know. Who's lining up in the backfield? Don't know. Can Chris Tyree give him something? I hope so.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I hope so in the backfield. Yeah. I don't feel great about Jafar Armstrong, but I think the line will be okay. They've recruited well up front. There's a lot to like about the offense. I just don't know if we know who that problem is yet. There are definitely problems on defense. They'll be fine on defense. But offensively.
I feel like I've confused you with that term.
Yeah, I mean, it's a double negative in the worst way, but it's fine. It's fine.
If you have a problem, that means you have an issue having standout players.
It's a weird term.
A lack of standout players is a problem.
I feel okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
About
but the case against
chances.
Is what? It's just a schedule, Ian Book, and not having game changers on offense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have to. I think Texas is actually a really easy defense.
Texas has seven new assistant coaches, two new coordinators, and Mike Yurcich and Chris Ash.
Mm-hmm.
On paper, the thing that really jumps out on offense is losing your two big wideouts and Devin DuVernay and Colin Johnson.
Are you making the case
in.
For right now? I just drafted him. You're making the case for? I just want to be straight here.
Making the case for. This is what I do with Texas.
I know. There's something about the Lone Star State between TCU and Texas and Buckeyes. You just, it sings to you.
I think they'll be fine. They got Sam Ellinger.
Okay.
They'll be fine.
Okay.
And defensively, you know, Chris Ash is changing the system. He's trying to be a little more reliant on creating pressure without blitzing. They got a lot back on defense. So you got to like that. The schedule is favorable. I like that they catch LSU early, maybe in an empty stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine how back Texas would be if they went on the road to Tiger Stadium and won week two against LSU?
With no crowd noise.
No crowd noise. 10 out of 10 backness right there.
Yeah. I mean, they beat Georgia in the Sugar Bowl a couple of years ago, so their record is pretty decent against top SEC teams recently, other than, you know, the loss to LSU last year. I think you're right. The optimism, there's a lot of very interesting pieces. They return a bunch on the offensive line. The running backs are good. It was a question last year, and now they have answers there. Tariq Black transfers in to help the receiving core. I think they moved a blue chip running back over to slot receiver. So I think there's enough speed, enough talent around Sam Ellinger, who has proved himself to play up to big games at times. I like the Chris Ash hire. They're going to be healthier in the secondary. I like the pieces up front. I think they were probably a year away last year, which was weird timing given the win over Georgia the year before and the momentum coming into the season. But they were probably a year away with how young they were on defense. And so now if they're healthier and more experienced, those freshmen and sophomores become sophomores and juniors. I think I like Mike Yurcich a lot as a coordinator. He makes every place better. So the case is obvious there. The case against is just they are Texas. The universe views them as Texas and treats them as such. And you're going to get your shootouts against Kansas. You're going to get your weird losses to Iowa State or Kansas State. Can you turn those close, ugly losses into close, ugly wins? Sometimes. But with Sam Ellinger, with the talent around him, it feels like a year set up, even with all of the changes on the sideline and the coaching staff. It feels like a good year to maximize what Texas can be because their road games are Kansas State, tough place to play, probably an empty stadium. Oklahoma State, tough place to play, probably an empty stadium. And LSU, same for them. And so it works out pretty well for Texas, especially in week two, if they're getting a Miles Brennan who's still a little bit raw and unsure of himself, it's great for Texas.
All right. That means that I have one pick to make here, doesn't it?
Correct.
I am stuck with Florida men. I like Florida, the Gators. I think Dan Mullen will get them ratcheted up. I have come around on Calm Throw Kyle. Do have some questions about some of the playmakers on offense and the backfield and elsewhere, but I've come to trust Dan Mullen. I think he will do a fine job in that situation. Defensively, I think they're stout as well. And I like the schedule, frankly. I think the schedule works to their favor. Their road games, listen to this. At Tennessee, bit of a rivalry, right? But at Tennessee, that's a winnable game.
Bit of a rivalry. Yeah.
On the road at Ole Miss, on the road at Vandy, on the road at Florida State to close out the year. Of course, the Georgia game's a neutral cider.
It's a great schedule.
Really good schedule. In between, they've got Eastern Washington, Kentucky, South Alabama, South Carolina, LSU, tough game, but at home.
Yeah, but LSU's in Gainesville, yeah.
They've got Missouri, New Mexico State. Like, these are all very, very winnable games. I find it hard to believe that we're not looking at least a 10-2 Florida team. And
of course,
depending on what happens elsewhere around the SEC East, you could probably make a case that this is a contending team. They've recruited well. If the offense can take more strides forward, given what Dan Mullen did last year, having to start Kyle Trask on short notice, slowly built that offense up around him. There's an awful lot to like there. Favorable schedule, good talent level. If things break in their direction, this is a steal. Could be potentially a steal.
Another haunting empty stadium. Swamp.
Oh, God. Wow.
That would be difficult to watch. But I'll happily do it. I will happily watch college football if it means empty stadiums. That's okay. I think you laid it out pretty well. I think they lost probably too many game changers on defense. I think there's intriguing dudes, young, redshirting, whatever, that could come in and immediately play an interesting role on defense. And I think they have an offensive problem. I love Kyle Trask. I think he is a really impressive quarterback, probably the best guy in the SEC returning. And I really like Kyle Pitts. But in terms of guys I'm just really scared of, either in the backfield or lining up out wide, I'm not sure I see it. That's the case against, but they look to have double-digit talent. I like their coordinators. Well, at least I like Todd Grantham, and Dan Mullen should be calling the plays. Maybe something has changed, but there's way more to like about Florida than not. And getting LSU at home, getting probably an empty Tennessee stadium on the road, it's great. I think Florida's set up to have a really, really impressive year. And they've closed the gap against Georgia. They went from being completely out of that game to losing by a touchdown, and it's a good year to get Georgia.
This means that I have to try and defend Florida State and Miami, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you can do it really quickly. You don't have to spend a ton of time going through position groups and coaches.
I will say that of these two teams, Miami is certainly the more interesting. Florida State's in transition. I have a lot of faith in Mike Norvell. I think he'll do a good job in Tallahassee. But the Miami situation's interesting because they made a big deal of Dan Enos last year and Tate Martell coming down from Ohio State. That didn't work.
Yeah, no.
But they've now brought in Rhett Lashley. He's going to change up the system again. They've added De'Eriq King from Houston, who's an exciting player. They got to improve their offensive line, but they've got a really good pass rush. Really, really good pass rush. And the back half of the defense won't be as good. But when you got that pass rush up front, that pass rush, Dan.
Yeah. That Temple influence. Quincy Roche, Manny Diaz.
You got to feel pretty good about that. I'm looking at the schedule now. Listen to this. Temple, Wagner, UAB. On the road at Michigan State, they should win that game. Home against
Pitt. Schedules. You read schedules like you're doing an audiobook. Wagner, UAB. You're great. You have a talent that I'll never have.
Home against Pitt, on the road at Wake, home against North Carolina, at UVA, home against Florida State, at Virginia Tech, at Georgia Tech, and home against Duke.
Dun, dun, dun.
They go 12-0.
I would have just cut off at like, hey, De'Eriq King's exciting, and they probably have the best duo of defensive ends in the country, and Greg Rousseau and Quincy Roche. Well,
tell me they couldn't go 12-0 against the schedule.
They won't go 12-0 against this schedule. There's a lot of problems with Miami. They can't protect their quarterback.
De'Eriq King's just going to...
They allow too
elusive.
Many mistakes
he's
on defense. Yeah.
Work with me here.
Okay.
Oh, God.
I'm trying. No. I think that's what Rhett Lashley will be saying to the offensive line coach at some point this year. I also am not a huge... Like, Rhett Lashley has, I think, built up his reputation somewhat going to coach for head coaches who are already the offensive mastermind of their team, and Gus Malzahn and recently Sonny Dykes at SMU. So, I hope he's good. I'm not sold.
All right, Dan. Well, here's what we got. I have Ohio State and Washington.
Boom. Killers.
I have LSU and Penn State. I have Clemson and Michigan. And I have Florida, Florida State, and Miami. And for you, you have Alabama and A&M, the Francione Farm, which is the best name mm-hmm. here.
Thank you.
Georgia and USC, Texas and Notre Dame. I love this.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Well, look, think, if Texas beats Oklahoma, think about it. Think about it. Even if they lose to LSU, 12-1 and winning the Big 12, it's a pretty good position. Got Oklahoma there last year.
And you've got Oklahoma and Auburn.
Yeah. Sugary sweethearts. Go.
So look, write in solidverbal@gmail.com. Let us know who has the better roster. Let us know what we left out in our cases for and against. Don't forget, you can always find us out there on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter. Go on the subreddit. Argue your side, if you will. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on Spotify, on Apple, on Google, anywhere you get a podcast. You can find The Solid Verbal all year round. Mm-hmm. And if you missed anything, go on out to the website, solidverbal.com. While you're there, sign up for the newsletter, because we're going to be sending that out more as we announce all sorts of fun stuff here in the off season. Dan, in the meantime, fun show, but let's keep those fingers crossed that there can be a safe way to put all of these selections to the test, because otherwise mm-hmm. We're going to have to simulate this in NCAA 14 with new rosters.
Will you play the People's Court music as you give the places where people can subscribe and follow and like?
Do you want me? You really want me to?
Yeah, I absolutely do.
Subscribe to the show. Spotify. Apple. Google. Anywhere you get your podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I got.
Okay. That's all I have. I'm pretty happy with my squad.
For that guy over there, my good friend, Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrand, we'll be back in 2 days. We'll talk to you then. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.